Savitri, Book 7, The Book of Yoga, Canto 5, The Finding of the Soul. And this is the second part. In Canto 3, called The Entry into the Inner Countries, just before Savitri made her entry into her inner countries, she surged out of her body's wall and stood a little span outside herself and looked into her subtle body's depths, and in its heart, as in a lotus bud, divined her secret and mysterious soul. Now Sri Aurobindo is going to talk about what happens in all the lotus buds, in all of Savitri's chakras, in her subtle body. In this part of Savitri, Sri Aurobindo speaks about the subtle centers in the body, the chakras. In one of his letters, he gives an exact location in the subtle body for the soul and the psychic being. This is what he says. The psychic being is in the heart center in the middle of the chest, not in the physical heart, for all the centers are in the middle of the body, but it is deep behind. When one is going away from the vital into the psychic, it is felt as if one is going deep, deep down, till one reaches that central place of the psychic. The surface of the heart center is the place of the emotional being. From there, one goes deep to find the psychic. In another writing, Sri Aurobindo also said that the psychic being is not in our three-dimensional physical world. He says the psychic being is in the fourth dimension, as related to our physical being. Mother and Sri Aurobindo did not teach much about the Kundalini Shakti at the base of the spine. They didn't teach much about the chakras. But here he gives a complete description of how Kundalini rises after Savitri has found her soul, and he tells us what happens to each chakra. He's already told us that two golden serpents are curled around the lintel of the entrance to the mystic cavern of Savitri's secret soul, and has also said that everything she sees there is a living symbol. He said that the serpent is the symbol of the Kundalini power, and here he puts it at the entrance, and then he describes it in full when the Kundalini power is awakened. In describing Savitri's soul, Sri Aurobindo starts with the pure self, or spirit, and tells how it puts a portion of itself into the human heart to bear all that life brings to us. Last week, we had Mother's explanation of the difference between our soul and our psychic being. Here is Sri Aurobindo's explanation of the difference between the pure self and the individual soul and the psychic being. It is necessary to understand clearly the evolving soul, the psychic being, and the pure Atman, the self or spirit. The pure self is unborn. It does not pass through death or birth. It is independent of birth or body or mind or life or this manifested nature. It is not bound by these things, not limited, not affected, even though it assumes them and supports them. The soul, on the contrary, is something that comes down into birth and passes through death, although it itself does not die, because it is immortal. It passes from one state to another, from the earth plane to other planes, and back again to the earth existence. It goes on with this progression from life to life, through an evolution which leads it up to the human state, and then it evolves through it all, a being of itself, which we call the psychic being. This supports the person's evolution and develops a physical, a vital, a mental human consciousness as its instruments of world... This supports the person's evolution and develops a physical, a vital, a mental human consciousness as its instruments of world experience and of a disguised, imperfect, but growing self-expression. All this it does from behind a veil, showing something of its divine self only insofar as the imperfection of the instrumental being will allow it. But a time comes when it is able to come out from behind the veil, to take command, and to turn all the instrumental being towards a divine fulfillment. This is the beginning of the true spiritual life. The soul is able now to make itself ready for a higher evolution of manifested consciousness than the mental human has. It can pass from the mental to the spiritual, and through degrees of the spiritual to the supramental state. So, Savitri is going to find her soul. Then, through a tunnel dug in the last rock, she came out where there shone a deathless sun. A house was there, all made of flame and light, and crossing a wall of doorless living fire, there, suddenly, she met her secret soul. A being stood, immortal, in transience, deathless, dallying with momentary things, in whose wide eyes of tranquil happiness, which pity and sorrow could not abrogate, infinity turned its gaze on finite shapes. Observer of the silent steps of the hours, eternity upheld the minute's acts and the passing scenes of the everlasting's play. In the mystery of its selecting will, in the divine comedy a participant, the spirit's conscious representative, God's delegate in our humanity, comrade of the universe, the transcendence ray, she had come into the mortal body's room to play at ball with time and circumstance. A joy in the world, her master movement here. The passion of the game lighted her eyes. A smile on her lips welcomed earth's bliss and grief. A laugh was her return to pleasure and pain. All things she saw as a masquerade of truth disguised in the costumes of ignorance, crossing the years to immortality. All she could front with the strong spirit's peace. But since she knows the toil of mind and life, as a mother feels and shares her children's lives, she puts forth a small portion of herself, a being no bigger than the thumb of man, into a hidden region of the heart, to face the pang, and to forget the bliss, to share the suffering, and endure earth's wounds, and labor mid the labor of the stars. This in us laughs and weeps, suffers the stroke, exults in victory, struggles for the crown, identified with the mind and body and life, it takes on itself their anguish and defeat, bleeds with fate's whips, and hangs upon the cross, yet is the unwounded and immortal self supporting the actor in the human scene. Through this, she sends us her glory and her powers, pushes to wisdom's heights through misery's gulfs. She gives us strength to do our daily task and sympathy that partakes of others' grief and the little strength we have to help our race. We, who must fill the role of the universe acting itself out in a slight human shape and on our shoulders carry the struggling world. This is in us, the Godhead, small and marred. In this human portion of divinity, she seats the greatness of the soul in time to uplift from light to light, from power to power, till on a heavenly peak it stands a king. In body weak, in its heart an invincible might, it climbs stumbling, held up by an unseen hand, a toiling spirit in a mortal shape. Here in this chamber of flame and light, they met. They looked upon each other, knew themselves, the secret deity and its human part, the calm immortal and the struggling soul. Then, with a magic transformation speed, they rushed into each other and grew one. Once more, she was human upon earthly soil, in the muttering night, amid the rain-swept woods and the rude cottage where she sat in trance. That subtle world withdrew deeply within, behind the sun veil of the inner sight. But now the half-opened lotus bud of her heart had bloomed and stood disclosed to the earthly ray. In an image shone revealed her secret soul. There was no wall severing the soul and mind, no mystic fence guarding from the claims of life. In its deep lotus home, her being sat, as if on concentration's marble seat, calling the mighty mother of the worlds to make this earthly tenement her house. As if in a flash, from a supernal light, a living image of the original power, a face, a form came down into her heart and made of it its temple and pure abode. But when its feet had touched the quivering bloom, a mighty movement rocked the inner space, as if a world were shaken and found its soul. Out of the inconscient, soulless, mindless night, a flaming serpent rose, released from sleep. It rose, billowing its coils, and stood erect. And climbing mightily, stormily on its way, it touched her centers with its flaming mouth. As if a fiery kiss had broken their sleep, they bloomed and laughed, surcharged with light and bliss. Then at the crown, it joined the eternal space. In the flower of the head, in the flower of matter's base, in each divine stronghold and nature knot, it held together the mystic stream, which joins the viewless summits with the unseen depths. The string of forts that make the frail defense safeguarding us against the enormous world, our lines of self-expression in its vast. An image sat of the original power, wearing the mighty mother's form and face, armed, bearer of the weapon and the sign whose occult might no magic can imitate. Manifold, yet one she sat, a guardian force. A savior gesture stretched her lifted arm, and symbol of some native cosmic strength, a sacred beast lay prone beneath her feet, a silent flame-eyed mass of living force. All underwent a high celestial change, breaking the black inconscience blind mute wall, effacing the circles of the ignorance. Powers and divinities burst flaming forth, each part of the being trembling with delight, lay overwhelmed with tides of happiness, and saw her hand in every circumstance, and felt her touch in every limb and cell. in the country of the lotus of the head, which thinking mind has made its busy space, in the castle of the lotus twixt the brows, whence it shoots its arrows of its sight and will, in the passage of the lotus of the throat, where speech must rise, and the expressing mind, and the heart's impulse run towards word and act, a glad uplift and a new working came. The immortal's thoughts displaced our bounded view. The immortal's thoughts, earth's drab idea and sense. All things now bore a deeper, heavenlier sense. A glad, clear harmony marked their truth's outline, reset the balance and measures of the world. Each shape showed its occult design, unveiled God's meaning in it for which it was made, and the vivid splendor of his artist thought. A channel of the mighty mother's choice, the immortal's will took into its calm control our blind or erring government of life. A loose republic once of wants and needs, then bowed to the uncertain sovereign mind, life now obeyed to a diviner rule, and every act became an act of God. In the kingdom of the lotus of the heart, love, chanting its pure hymeneal hymn, made life and body mirrors of sacred joy, and all the emotions gave themselves to God. In the navel lotus' broad imperial range, its proud ambitions and its master lusts were tamed into instruments of a great calm sway to do a work of God on earthly soil. In the narrow nether center's petty parts, its childish game of daily dwarf desires was changed into a sweet and boisterous play, a romp of little gods with life in time. In the deep place where once the serpent slept, there came a grip on matter's giant powers for large utilities in life's little space. A firm ground was made for heaven's descending might. Behind all reigned her sovereign deathless soul. Casting aside its veil of ignorance, allied to gods and cosmic beings and powers, it built the harmony of its human state. Surrendered into the great world mother's hands, only she obeyed her soul's supreme behest in the enigma of the inconscious world. A secret soul behind, supporting all, is master and witness of our ignorant life, admits the person's look and nature's role. But once the hidden doors are flung apart, then the veiled king steps out in nature's front. A light comes down into the ignorance. Its heavy, painful knot loosens its grasp. The mind becomes a mastered instrument, and life a hue and figure of the soul. All happily grows towards knowledge and towards bliss. A divine puissance then takes nature's place and pushes the movements of our body and mind. Possessor of our passionate hopes and dreams, the beloved despot of our thoughts and acts, she streams into us with her unbound force, into mortal limbs, the immortal's rapture and power. An inner law of beauty shapes our lives. Our words become the natural speech of truth. Each thought is a ripple on a sea of light. Then sin and virtue leave the cosmic lists, they struggle no more in our delivered hearts. Our acts chime with God's simple natural good, or serve the rule of a supernal right. All moods unlovely, evil, and untrue forsake their stations in fierce disarray and hide their shame in the subconscious dusk. Then lifts the mind a cry of victory. O soul, my soul, we have created heaven. Within, we have found the kingdom here of God. His fortress built in a loud, ignorant world. Our life is entrenched between two rivers of light. We have turned space into a gulf of peace and made the body a capital of bliss. What more? What more, if more must still be done? In the slow process of the evolving spirit, in the brief stage between a death and birth, a first perfection stage is reached at last. Out of the wood and stone of our nature's stuff, a temple is shaped where the high gods could live. Even if the struggling world is left outside, one man's perfection still can save the world. There is one, a new proximity to the skies, a first betrothal of the earth to heaven, a deep concordat between truth and life. A camp of God is pitched in human time.